2020 is pulling everyone's mask off. I mean, whether it's Democrats and their murder of the Me Too movement and their blind support for someone like Joe Biden.
They seemed really unreasonable, and it's like, are we still playing this game? What do you guys think about that?
In the here and now, that is going to be my concern. We don't want to see any more loss of life just because we lost our own lives.
And then have these politicians who want to co-opt everything just because it's near election time.
But solutions for these problems have to be positive, and they can't be based in policing. They just can't be based in more authoritarianism. They can't be, you don't arrest your way out of these problems.
Evening, everybody. This is Brian Powers. Thanks for joining us here. And we're here every week, Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Hey, a couple minutes late tonight. I'm sorry about that. You know, I didn't even realize, but I was listening to It's War, Baby. One of our comrades shot me a message on Instagram and said, will you play my music on your show? And I said, fuck yes, I'll play your music on my show. That's some good shit. And you know what, man? I've gotten into it. And one of the things we say, we ain't just about activism and hating on politicians around here. We're about art. We're about activism. So, you know, man, if you got some art, it got my mind thinking. Like, we've got this beautiful platform here with all these beautiful people. Send me some art. It doesn't even have to be just music. It could be a painting, a sculpture, a poem you wrote, something. We love to highlight more artists, and I'm certainly always out there for any communities. I kind of got, like, this hip-hop vibe going lately, and I've been talking to people, like, I love hip-hop. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's one of my favorite musical styles, and, you know, I've always appreciated Public Enemy and Wu-Tang Clan and a lot of great kind of like old school hip hop stuff. But I've been real heavy on it, man. I'm eclectic personally. And I know that my audience may not all like hip hop. I know I have revolutionaries out there that love South American music or Brazilian music or one of my favorite music from Egypt, Middle Eastern music. So, you know, I definitely need a little bit of variety on the show when it comes to the music. Not that I'm hating on my hip hop comrades. I love all of you. Trust me. But, you know, send in some other stuff. Let's get some different styles of music going here. Trey Hearn, I see you in the background, comrade. Thanks for making it this week. Trey Hearn Cruz is going to be joining us again to help me out hosting duties. Leah, our show writer, is here in the background. We're going to talk to her in a minute about the happenings going on at New Jersey Revolution Radio. But I want to take a minute to thank everybody that's, you know, supported us, whether it's making a donation or sharing us and retweeting us and letting people know that New Jersey Revolution Radio exists. It's been great to see all that support. And I had a conversation today about the little war I've been in with the Howie Hawkins campaign, which I've been having a lot of fun on my Twitter. As a matter of fact, part, you know, I made my own Twitter feed and I made my own Instagram feed lately. And Leah, our show writer, who I'll bring in now. Part of that reason is because I'm gonna take my hands off of company stuff. The truth of the matter is, you know, New Jersey Revolution Radio is a lot of comrades working very hard. It is not Brian Powers' ego project. And so, you know, let me just do an ego project under my own name. And New Jersey Revolution Radio should be more a collective, independent news source. And Leah, you're one of those comrades, and you've been running the social media for about a week now. Getting your feet wet. I saw a couple of the Instagram videos that you made, but you didn't post them yet. I like them. How's the experience been so far this week, kind of taking over social media for an independent media network?
Well, it's been really fun. I mean, I just kind of enjoy being on social media, so it's kind of something that I enjoy doing regardless of that I'm getting paid for it. So, yeah.
We all say thank you to our donors for helping Leah out making these posts, because like I said, you know, it doesn't happen without that. But you dived into it too. You didn't just do this because, you know, it's your job. You liked it. How much feedback have you gotten so far? Like, are you seeing already the numbers kind of take up more likes and stuff, or are we still learning in the first week?
I'm learning that people really like a lot of posts in a day. Like, people like to see your faces. They don't think, oh, it's like annoying, as long as you're not literally spamming. People like content. So, you know, yeah, it's good that we can get content out there.
It is good. And now that I have my own. So if you're out there and you're not following us, we're at NJRevRad on Twitter, right? And then Instagram and Facebook, how do they find us?
Facebook, they can just search New Jersey Revolution Radio. And Instagram, oh, I always get it wrong. I think it's New Jersey Revolution Radio. I will double check.
Okay, we're going to check that and make sure.
It's either that or NJ Revolution.
NJ, right? Yeah,
New Jersey Revolution Radio. Yeah,
share it on our screen. Share some of these links on our screen. You got the screen share capability over there, right? Well, I bring in our co-host here. Go ahead and see if you can pop up some of that those social media.
Yeah, I got you.
Trey Hearn's in the background. Then he disappeared again when I tried to bring him in. This guy has. I'm gonna start calling him Houdini. Because there he is. He's coming back on in a minute. Before I bring him in, though, you know, I did mention a minute ago, I've been kind of at war with the Howie Hawkins campaign, and I did mean to get into a little bit with Trey Hearn last week, but we didn't because he had some technical glitches and stuff. But, you know, it's all good. And it's not all negative. And I want to say that, you know, I talked to a comrade just before the show who supports Howie and supported Howie throughout the campaign and is not as much of a hater as I am. But, you know, I talked and I said, listen, what I'm doing right now is warning everybody about the incompetence I saw. To be honest, which I was pretty nice, but I didn't want to be a hypocrite and I didn't want to be somebody that, you know, supported this guy during a campaign and then after the campaign came out and called him names and stuff. So I started prior to the election, but I didn't put a lot of pressure, I think, on other Greens and people who, you know, disagreed with me, quite frankly, made this man like Howie. I liked Howie before I found out he was a potato head. Believe me, I was a fan of the guy. I didn't out and out endorse him, but he hired me and I took the job. So, you know, I kind of liked him and I was wrong. I changed my mind, which is something I think people still hanging on. And I was honestly going to let this thing die out after the election, but the potato head's still organizing. He's still doing and he's still trying to raise money. And one of the things he tried to do was raise money for Joe Biden, raise money for this legal fund to count votes before the Biden, and which was absolutely ridiculous. So anyway, Leah, I know that I'm going to talk to you about weed later on. So I'm going to bring you in before the commercial break. All right. Okay. So I'm going to bring you back in later. We're going to talk about weed. I promise you. I'm going to smoke a joint while I talk to Trey Hearn about the green party. Because hi, Trey Hearn. How you doing, man?
Peace, man. What's good with you?
I'm doing good, man. How are things out in Minnesota? You know, the election's over. We have... I mean, Joe Biden's won. I know Trump's kicking and screaming, whatever, but we all kind of see, everybody's seeing the writing on the wall now at this point. How's your state reacting to the news? Which where did your electoral votes go to? Did you go for Biden or did they go for
Biden? They went for Biden heavily.
Yeah. Okay. So how's the state overall reacting, you think?
We had a rally, a press conference for something that happened against some protesters who were supporting Biden, and then they got arrested by Biden supporters. But they so we had a press conference on there to support them a day or so after the election, and some Trump supporters showed up and said they wanted all the votes counted and stuff like that. So, yeah. I mean, most of the state is happy about it. The Trump supporters are still a little bit upset, and they've been coming up to the governor's mansion and doing stuff like that. So that's where it's at. Pretty much.
Yeah. How do you feel about it personally? I mean, now that this election's behind us, I mean, I know you're still green, right? You're still going forth with our party.
Yeah. But,
I mean, how do you now that it's all behind you, how do you feel about the 2020 elections? Where's your heart at?
I still feel the same way as I felt before, that a vote for Biden is a vote for Trump, and a vote for Trump is a vote for Biden. And it's like I told you last week, I mean, there was actually protesters who went out to say, hey, don't let Trump steal the election. And then they got kettled on the I-94 freeway by Democrat power structure. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, the police.
But they're ran by the Democrats are making the decisions here to do these type of things. So I don't really. I don't see a lot of total different. I don't see things being that much different for people as far as the things that we're fighting for, you know, police against police brutality. Trump says he doesn't want to defund the police. Biden doesn't want to defund the police. No.
Well, they backed right off of that narrative quick.
Right. And the whole Democrat Party is starting to, you know, after they got, you know, after they got themselves in office off the BLM energy, now it's like, we don't want to defund the police and we're going to step back away from
some. Well, we've seen this. And this is why Biden is so dangerous, and why we need to organize at a grassroots level, and why I think it's important that we have good leadership in our grassroots organizations. And I'll get into why Howie Hawkins and his crew of morons aren't that. But, you know, I think that so I'll give an example here. I'm going to have a show next week with some comrades that work a lot on immigrant detention, these concentration camps. I live very close to a nice concentration camp here in Elizabeth, New Jersey. It's just a few miles away from my house. And there's others here there where they detain people from all over the country right here in New Jersey. It's easy to deport people. We have ports. We have an airport here. And there have been some success in getting these Democratic county boards to agree to close down one of the detention centers. And another, the private leasing company, said they were going to cancel the lease that they had written, you know, contract with ICE when it was right. So they would have to shut down the facility. But now those people are backtracking and saying, well, the Biden administration is coming in and we feel we can work with them better. So right. I want to just sum that up in a sentence. What you're hearing there is, because Joe Biden got elected, we're going to keep concentration camps open. And that's what's scary to me, man. That stuff like that is now going on. The Democrats think just because they're in power, they're good guys, and so they can beat children and put them in cages, and it ain't that big of a deal.
Exactly. And I was hearing those type of excuses for Biden this whole time. But I don't want to rain on, like, my son or other people that I know who are excited and are, you know, if you are excited and you're celebrating the Biden victory, more power to you. And I don't want to rain on your parade, and I'm happy people are happy. But when things slow down, I think it's time for serious organizers and people to really do some research and get some political education so you know what you're supporting. And even like I think I was telling you last week, and it was the fact that George Bush and his cronies are supporting Biden.
Oh, yeah.
And might have, you know, they might even be a part of his administration. It's very problematic.
You're right already. And you're already seeing talks of Mitt Romney being in a cabinet. Talks of, you know, and you're already seeing his you know, the person in charge of the Pentagon, who started. I was actually just looking her up a little bit. Michelle, you hold on a minute. I was just looking it up. Michelle Flournoy. Who was Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton and served under Barack Obama during a gross expansion of our military industrial complex. You know, we're going to talk a lot about that coming up here in a few minutes with somebody from Veterans for Peace. But I do want to spend a few minutes, because we are Greens and we did run a campaign. Nobody knows about it, but we did run a data head for. Now, I'll tell you just from a personal experience, and just to point out here that I've been a 6-year faithful Green. I've never been a member of the Democratic Party or an active member. I supported Bernie Sanders in 2016. I think I door knocked for Obama when my union gave me $75 for 4 hours of doing so. I went from liberal to communist. It happens, and that's my progression. But to say that, so when I came out against, Howie Hawkins, start calling him a potato head based on my inside knowledge of having worked for his campaign of 2 years, and witnessing them trimming the leaves off the top of his head as he flourished, you know, it was clear to me that this guy is just his complete team. It seems like he pulled up in front of a mental hospital, loaded up a bus full of people, and had them run a campaign from him. And some of these people are my friends, and some of them are nice, but his staff, to say they were unprofessional would be the most grossest understatement I could ever make in my whole life. And I pointed it out for weeks after I left the campaign. People can't call me during my rants here. Come on now. So anyway, but I come out, you know, and I have all this. Now, the defense, when I say that this guy only got on the ballot in 31 states, couldn't even get 500,000 votes, the defense of is that I'm a Democratic Party troll. I founded an independent media for you fucking ingrates, you fucking Howie Hawkins douchebags. I spent 3 years of my life, and my house is in fucking foreclosure, Well, I busted my ass to put a media company together for you. And what'd you do? When I had a chance at a national exposure to run through your pathetic ass fucking campaign, you abandoned me. You let them attack my business. You let them attack my reputation inside that campaign. I wasn't a Democrat. And I don't even know who the fuck Dario Hunter is because he never came to my state and campaign. And I think I retweeted one of his retweets. Now everybody wants to say that I support Dario Hunter. I don't know the man. Never had a significant conversation with him. I think I interviewed him at a convention as a media guy. But I didn't campaign on him. The only defense they have is other people's fault. Do me a favor, Howie Hawkins, potato heads. Look in the fucking mirror and ask yourselves why you had a list of 900 people that signed up to help you campaign and not a one of them got a phone call until I showed up and said, you got to call volunteers, you dumbasses. You ask yourselves why there was 10 a month without a fundraising email that came out of your fucking campaign. How the fuck are you running a campaign when you ain't paying people, when you ain't raising money for them? But all you got is that I'm a troll. I'm a Democrat. You're a fucking idiot. Look into my background. Look at my history. I went to jail for the fucking Green Party. And those scumbags turned their back on me. You think I'm the one calling names? Come at me. Come at me, my former comrades. You're lucky I'm not saying your names. And I'm only talking about Howie Hawkins, the potato head. Because there's a dozen of you that put a knife in my back this year. At least. Come at me.
And I apologize on behalf of just myself, as being an officer in the Green Party, I apologize that you had that experience.
It wasn't you, and you don't owe me an apology.
Absolutely. But, you know, I just feel like we just want people to have good experiences. And so that I think when we have good experiences, that it creates good energy. And I think good energy causes growth. And I think that's what we need to see right now with the Green Party is growth. And so things that are stopping our growth, I think we have to really take time to address. So one thing I'm asking for is that we just have a debrief, that we do debrief as a party, as a national committee, and say what went wrong so that we don't make these mistakes going into 2024. I feel like the Green Party has an excellent opportunity with what's going on in our country. And if we can become more organized and then just treat each other with some respect, follow our own principles, especially when it comes to things like regime change. If we don't believe in regime change in another country, supposedly, then we shouldn't try to come and over. We shouldn't interfere with other states' politics, if you get what I mean. So I think those are some of the things that I would like to debrief on and that I would like to talk on. We lost our ballot access here in Minnesota, and we're very upset about that. We had a plan in Minnesota for things that we wanted to do, and we had a strong Senate candidate, and then all of a sudden things just switched or something, you know. So I'm not going to go into all of it right now at this time, but I definitely am looking forward to the Green Party debriefing the 2020 presidential elections and the whole thing from the primary on through the election. I think there needs to be a debrief and an honest discussion about what really went on so we don't make those mistakes going forward.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, they are mistakes I've seen before, man. I mean, they are mistakes, quite frankly, you know, that I was appalled by seeing my own party make because they were mistakes that we claim, you know, that we're members of the Green Party because we don't want to do these things. We don't want to be hypocrites. We don't want to treat labor with disrespect. We want to truly embrace Black Lives Matter. And that's not what I saw. And so I think the key for this debrief, which I love, I thank you. And that shows leadership on your part. And honestly, you're one of the few. Listen, it hasn't been all the Greens. And I think we have to disconnect Green Party from the Howie Hawkins campaign. And I'm very happy to distance myself and say, listen, you want leadership in the Green Party, go look elsewhere. The people that ran that campaign are a fucking catastrophe, but there are real leaders. And I think you showed some tonight. So I appreciate that, man. And I do wish you luck. And I'm going to report on it. I mean, my piece of this pie has always been, and even before this campaign, was an independent media network. And when I say independent, I meant connected to the Green Party. But it doesn't mean y'all get a pass on doing dumb shit in front of me. You know what I'm saying? And now, how else do you expect to have transparency? How else do you grow a party using the right people unless mistakes are exposed publicly? This is politics, man.
It is grassroots democracy. So part of grassroots democracy is creating green organizations or like green media. So like we need to have greens who have their own radio shows, greens who have their own co-ops, greens who have someone brought up an ideal even before I joined the Green Party. We should have our own printing press and things like that and create jobs. Even if it's not ran by the Green Party, maybe another green is running it and he's hiring greens and we're doing things.
That's some old school revolutionary stuff, the printing shops, man.
Yeah, but those things across that line, the printing shop, as far as great shows like these, we need more of this type of stuff that greens can plug into. Because the Democrat Party has it and the Republicans have Rush Limbaugh. There's an AM station where Hannity comes on, Rush comes on. They're all coming back to back.
Yeah, it's a shame. Are you going to stick around for the main interview? We're going to be talking to somebody from Veterans for Peace. I got to do a commercial real quick, and then I'll bring you right back. All right, man, I'm going to bring in my writer here because I promised her a little FaceTime tonight. She's very excited about I got to tell you, Leah is fun because she gets really happy about coming on the air with us and doing things. And I promised you I had to smoke a joint a little bit. It didn't relax me enough to talk about the potato head dog, did it? Was that sativa? Fuck. So weed is legal. And I think they came up with a commission already here in New Jersey now, right?
Yeah, they did. I'm
sure it's very socially justice minded and prison advocates on it. Who'd they put on it?
They put a couple people on it. I believe one person of color so far. So we've got Diana, and I don't want to butcher pronunciation of the last name, as the chair of Cannabis Regulatory Commission, and Jeff Brown will serve as executive director of the commission, and the governor will also appoint Krista Nash as a member of the commission upon recommendation of Senate President. So that woman, Diana, is a woman of color, so things do look good, but like that's how they look.
Yeah, we're good at identity politics, particularly in the Democratic Party.
Oh, definitely. That's Democrats' thing.
I have often, and I know, look, Ed Fortune, the New Jersey weed man, has always had my political support on the legalization of cannabis. And I will simply not rest until he is crowned the grand czar poobah of weed in New Jersey. That's it. I mean, until the commission consists of New Jersey weed man being in charge of all cannabis transactions.
He's so brave. Like, he's gotten in trouble, but he just keeps doing what he's doing.
I mean, Ed's a guy like I said, we disagree. This guy's a libertarian for the most part. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, but he's a good dude. We disagree on a lot of politics. He's good on racial justice, and we agree on a lot of politics. And what I love about, you know, kind of my relationship with the Weed Man is that we're about our issues. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can see eye to eye on these couple of issues here and there, even though we generally disagree on most politics. As far as him risking arrest, though, man, I mean, like, I worry about my friend every day. I got to tell you, the risk he's taken, and the guy's selling weed openly across from City Hall in Trenton. He's growing weed. He's got 10-foot weed bushes.
He said, fuck it.
Really? I mean, he's revolutionary to his fucking bone marrow. And, you know, I appreciate what he's doing. I support him. And I just will not be happy until the state makes him these grand poobah czar of cannabis transactions in New Jersey. Yeah. I want him. And on a serious note, though, I want felons to be allowed into the market. I want the people that have been selling me weed illegally going to jail, transporting it and doing the things that needed to be done to bring this wonderful product into my life illegally for 20 plus years. And I don't see a reason why, you know, corporate people who, you know, here we are, the cannabis, you know, so these... Yeah. These are straight up governor's appointments. I guess they would have to go through a state Senate confirmation. But I mean, I won't be happy. How do you, you're with me on the weed. Should we get a petition together or something to get weed, man?
Absolutely. I would love to do that. That'll be a great cause.
He got a lot of votes. I'm sure he got a lot. He always gets a lot of votes. So I know he ran for assembly.
Yeah. I mean, he must be well liked.
Yeah. Okay. The August Agency, you can contact our friend Charlie at the August Agency. He does QuickBooks accounting and more for small businesses. Charlie also opened an art gallery, which I didn't write the name of them, but we got to start sponsoring his art gallery too. If you're friends with Charlie on Facebook, make sure you take a look at his work, and I think we lost our guest, didn't we? You take a look at his work, and also you can call him if you need your business taken care of. A little bit of accounting, you can go to www.theaugustagency.biz, or you can call him 201-895-7227. Again, that's 201-895-7227, www.theaugustagency.biz. All right, so that's it. And we have, coming back is Natasha from Veterans for Peace, but I see she dropped out of the studio for a minute. So I will ask Trehearn, do you have anything you could talk about while I call her on the phone?
I wanted to ask you about...
You do your plugs for a minute while I do a little production or just, I don't know, hum a tune, do something.
You could put me up on get me up to speed more on the lawsuits. Are there any lawsuits out there as far as cannabis is concerned? Or how is that going? You're saying it's legal now out there.
Yeah, but kind of, but not really. So they have to do this commission, right? So they when they legalized it, Leah, can you explain to him the what they're setting up here, like how this law works? Did you follow it enough?
Not quite.
Okay, so basically, rather than just like legalizing it, and the amendment kind of reads okay, but the part that there's a catch-all in there that it's all pending the formation of this commission, which is appointed by the governor. And Phil Murphy, our governor, is this Democrat. He's a corporate Democrat. He came out of Goldman Sachs. He's kind of got a workmanlike attitude, I would say. But he, like any other Democrat, gives great lip service to social justice whilst serving white supremacy, just like anybody other Democrat. So, what we see happening is basically, and it's not just happening in New Jersey, is corporate cannabis dominating the market, as opposed to, homegrown medical cannabis, that kind of stuff,
Okay. So what you're saying is you'd like to see your local, the local professional weed man become the czars, I guess, or something.
That's what's fair, because those are the people who started the market. Even if it was a black market, it's a market, and that's... When there's a legal market, the people are going to be coming from the black market, or at least a lot of them. So, like, it's only fair that those people who are maintaining the market before should still have at least some say, some benefit from it.
Is it a licensing process or something like that that people would have to go through?
So, that's the thing that they're setting up now, right? So right now they're going to have to take a look at this, this constitutional amendment, and there is a commission got to take place, that's got to be formed basically by the governor. I think it's a 5-person commission, and they will form a regulatory body that really writes the laws. But there's really no restrictions on them. And while the amendment itself allows for the cultivation of cannabis, our state legislature has stood staunchly opposed to home cultivation, even for patients. I mean, we've had the Kuma law that passed that legalized medical cannabis. I'm a patient. I'm a Kuma patient here in New Jersey. Still doesn't allow us to grow our own medicine. And the only place I can buy my weed legally sells it for $60 an eighth.
Yeah, see? So that's tight on.
And you're a veteran.
Yeah. Are you anybody else? What's that? Yeah, no. That's what we were talking about. I do hope our friend Natasha can make it back into the room, because I don't like being wished a happy Veterans Day, to be honest with you. So I was thinking about, when I think about Veterans Day, I think about my grandfather, because he served in World War II. Both my grandfathers served in World War II. My Jaju, who's Polish name for grandfather, served in Italy. And my favorite story he would tell me is, he was kind of a cleanup crew. He would go in after a battle and clean out houses. Pretty dangerous work. I mean, basically he would go apartment by apartment, clearing buildings, after a battle would take place and stuff like that. Wow. And years later, a cousin of mine who taught a class on World War II history was writing a book about things that soldiers had with them at war. And she went around interviewing soldiers and people that had been in battles that and what they carried with them at the time.
The things they carried.
Right, right, right. So, you know, talk about the picture of their mom or their girlfriend or a special, you know, trinket or whatever they had or their gun or whatever, you know, they had with them. And so she asked my grandfather, you know, what he carried with him at war. And he told her a spoon. I had a spoon. And she said, why did you have a spoon? And he said, well, we would go in and we'd clear out these buildings. And the Nazis had been there already most of the time. And they'd already gone. And every once in a while, we would find it was very rare to find somebody actually try and fight. But most people would just give up or, you know, they were there through tough times and they just were glad to see somebody alive, you know. So but the buildings would be gutted. The Nazis will have looted the buildings. All the silverware would be gone. So there would be no utensils in the house. But they would never go into the basement and take the food storage. And he said that Italian women make the best jelly on the face of the world. And he was in Italy for some point. He was in France. And he said, French women make the best jelly in the world. But you would go down and you would open the cabinets. You have jelly, but there would be no spoons because they took all the silverware. So I had a spoon with me. And that way I could eat the jelly.
Gotta make do.
Yeah.
So I think of that story and I think of my grandfather who served in World War II, which is one of the very few justified wars that we were involved in and one that we had to be dragged kicking and screaming into after 26 million evil communist Russians gave their lives fighting Nazis in their homeland. You know, we decided to come in at the very end of that war. And after a lot of death and destruction had already taken place across both Europe and Russia. You know, but my grandfather's service was at least he was killing Nazis. I don't view my service and when I served in the Persian Gulf as the same. I view my service as defending the profits of oil companies. And I can't really see it as much else. And when people get mad at me for saying that, like I just show them a picture of me on an aircraft carrier on a boat in, you know, Jebel Ali. And there's a big bunch of oil tankers behind me and oil refineries and stuff.
Wow.
What did you think I was doing?
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, and that's what I'm concerned about with Joe Biden, frankly. And just knowing who's supporting him, knowing the people who put you in that situation are some of the people who funded his campaign, 45 alumni, the Lincoln Project, and others. So I'm pretty sure they'll be looking for something in return for those contributions that they gave.
Yeah.
But I still thank you for your service, you know, and it takes heart to do that. So
I generally ask people to thank me for my service by not joining and telling their kids not to join.
Yeah, but I just think most people don't join thinking that they're going to be protecting oil companies. They think they're going to protect their country and do their
I don't even think that's the case. Did you serve? Did you ever serve?
No, sir.
So I think that's why white people join. I think right. That was my attitude. I think that was a little bit of my attitude that I was going to go in and be like my grandfathers and heroes in America and yay. And when I got in, what I found out, it was a lot of poor people that couldn't find a job.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was just a lot of people. And I found that my American nationalism wasn't quite as present in other recruits as it was in me, you know, and I think it was very much along class lines. You know, you could see that the middle class, the white kids, the kids that came out of suburbia were much more like, hey, I'm going to go serve America. And that people came from poor and impoverished neighborhoods, and including white people from poor and impoverished neighborhoods were not so yay America. We're there because they had a couple of kids and no health insurance.
Right.
Or their parents had thrown them out of their house and they, you know, thankfully never gotten arrested, but did have a drug habit, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Hey, thanks for that sobering reality of that. But yeah, I agree with you though.
It's all right. Lee, do you have family members in the military?
I do not. I have a grandpa who was in the Navy, and thank goodness he's okay, because that's dangerous. He was like on his way, like in the ocean or something, when the Cuban Missile Crisis happened. So that's pretty crazy. But I just want to say, Brian, it's really interesting to hear your perspective and to say, like, that you wouldn't want us to tell our kids to enlist. And there are people who not only, like, do it for financial reasons, but some kids just, like, don't really know what they want to do in life. And they think that joining the army is, like, something that's, like, viewed as good universally. So that's why they do it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm grateful that they serve our nation, but also we have to look at why people are doing that.
Yeah. So we were just talking about the GI Bill. So I had an uncle who was who served, and he had to fight for a long time to get his pension or get to be a part of the GI Bill, to get his just due for serving America and stuff like that. So that we were, we had a little book club that went over a lot of those issues. We were talking about this actually yesterday, and how some of the African Americans who joined World War II. But it's good to hear hear from you what you've seen there too.
Yeah, I served under Clinton. I served under Clinton in between the Gulf Wars from 1995 to 1999. So, you know, we went into the Persian Gulf on an aircraft carrier a couple of times. You know, it was, I don't think I knew at that time. I was 18 to 22 years old, you know, and I don't think I could really, at that age, your brain doesn't comprehend danger the same way it does when you get older. I think they say your frontal lobe ain't developed till you're like 25 and you really don't understand the consequences of where you're at. I remember young Brian. Young Brian didn't realize he was in a war zone. I didn't get it. You know what I'm saying, man? Like, I was getting drunk in different parts of the world. It was a lot of fun. I had a lot of great friends. You know, there's camaraderie there and fun. But I didn't. You don't know what's up when you're that old, man.
Yeah.
You know? Were you smart at 18?
No, sir. Not at all. Yeah. No. No. I understand exactly what you're saying. So, yeah, that's... Yeah, we shouldn't. I wouldn't, and I don't encourage people to do that either.
Yeah,
just because of why they're doing it today, especially because of what you just described. It's not. I don't see, like you're saying, I don't see the Navy protecting America when they're abroad. I see them protecting British Petroleum, things like that.
So, yeah. I'm about to be 23, and I'm just thinking about how, like, I'm going to be older than Ryan was when he was in the Army. That's crazy.
Yeah. It kind of get and like you said, you know, and of course, I'm not trying to insult people of your age too much. I mean, I have some amazingly brilliant young people in my work as an activist and stuff like that. But it's just the reality of who they recruit. You know, and the difference, I think, Trey Hearn, in the image of where a soldier comes from or where, you know, a naval officer, so these people, you know, these military people come from and what they really are. And the military is much more political and classist than, you know, people think it is. It also teaches you a lot about life and grows you up real quick. You know, teach you how to clean your room. And, you know, I met, you know, the thing, a lot of these guys who go in there, they never shaved in their life. Nobody taught them how to shave. They didn't have a male person in their house teaching them how to be a man and take care of grooming procedures that men, you know, men with physical or at least physically male bodies, you know, have to groom themselves. There's things we got to do. Just like anybody else. And quite frankly, you know, people get taught that stuff sometimes not until they become 18 or 19 years old and go to boot camp. And the drill sergeant's the one that teaches them that. And I know the image is like a drill sergeant yelling you all the time. And believe me, you get yelled at a lot. But, you know, there are also moments where they're acting like a parent to these young people. And it's an experience a lot of them haven't had. Some of them haven't had.
Yeah.
You know, you can understand why they get sucked into this thing. Same way a cult operates. You know, they fill real needs in people's lives.
Mm. Yeah, that's key.
So we on the left got to fill those needs before they go to the military.
Exactly.
right? We on the left. What do we do? Honestly, man, like we protest a lot and we build a lot and we're trying to, but I think each of us got to say, like, what are we offering to people on the left? Look at what the military offers. Look at the right wing offers. Look at what these mega churches offer.
You know what would be great if we could offer?
Yes.
I think unity would be good because that's something the military has, and that's kind of something the right has, at least more so than the left. So it would be, I think that would help appeal to people if we could get our shit straight. Like you were saying earlier, Brian, like you and Weedman, like you disagree on some things. He's a libertarian. I mean, he has his own ideology, but you guys see eye to eye and focus on the issues that you agree on. And I think if a lot of people have that kind of mindset, then that would make the left a lot more appealing place to kind of be.
And that's what we were talking about earlier as far as creating those co-ops, creating those printing press, creating employment opportunities on the left so that we can have people plugged in. So just like Head Start, that's a Democrat Party organization, so they're teaching you at a very early age. They're creating a certain psychology at a very early age. So I propose that we have something like Green Start so that we can start.
We can come up with our own name. Well, we got young eco-socialists. I don't know how much you're talking. We have a great, I mean, I have someone, Justin Roy here and Matt Scolar, who worked on our Senate campaign a little bit. I don't know, honestly, like for some of the reasons that have been, you know, go around it, if they stick around the party though, I mean, there's some great young eco-socialists out there. You know, and it's always got to be about the future. You're right. I mean, what are we doing unless we're educating people? I think a big part of, you know, what the problem is there's not enough leadership skills. There's not enough people teaching and learning and running that kind of program out there. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to see that kind of stuff, but I think it's got to give people material needs in the end, man. We got to get more into, you know, either whether it be food programs or education programs, childcare programs, stuff like that. Look and listen, you know, really honestly be able to provide jobs with health. You say you provide jobs, but what about jobs with healthcare? I mean, the truth is, yeah, I'm very fortunate to have Leah hanging around me here, but we ain't got the kind of budget that can bring her full time and give her healthcare. You know,
somewhere though, you know.
Yeah, we're starting where we got it. And when I first, you know, took back over the company as a sole owner, was one thing. It's like, I make sure she makes $15 an hour. Here I am, Mr. $15 an hour for the last 6 years of my life, you know. I mean, but that limits our hours, you know what I'm saying? You know, we need to build real institutions. And if we're not building them, you know, support them. I think we got some trust fund kids out there that are, you know, doing ego-based projects. You know?
Yeah.
Feed my ego, man. I got ego. I just got no money.
But yeah, we and that's okay. And that's what I think. There's been some organization, a lot of organizations, and I think the movement is getting to a point where, especially in the Black community, where we're not saying it's not okay that we don't have money, but we're realizing that we don't. When a certain time we thought that we did. But now we're looking at pure data and we're realizing that we have some work to do. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as you're not fantasizing or pretending or acting like, you know, I got it all or I'm doing it all. You know, if you can be honest with yourself about where you're at and what you need to do to get there, I think we'll be in a pretty good shape. So I'm really excited about what we're doing here in Minnesota. With our activism, we are doing food shelves. We do have things like that happening. And we're not employing people now, but I think in the future we will be able to set up some employment opportunities for a few people, not for everybody. But I think that's part of grassroots democracy also.
Man, we're making sure we tell everybody to support, you know, independent media, support, you know, something revolutionary out there. Get away from giving money to candidates for office, especially within the Democratic Party. Get more into the foundations of these things. You know what I'm saying? I think that's important, you know, as we move forward. We're running out of time here. It's going to be a quick show. I'm sorry we lost Natasha. I guess she had some technical errors. We had technical errors with Trey Heron last week, but you made it back all week this week. And then we lost our guest from Veterans for Peace, but we had a great discussion here tonight. It was important. I got a little cathartic. Thank you for listening to me vent for a little bit there. I appreciate that. But before we go, man, let us know, what do you got going on in the next coming weeks and months that people should be paying attention to, man?
Well, this Friday is our food drive. So if you do live in Minnesota, you could drop off food at 999 Selby Avenue from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday, the following day. You can come pick the food up at the same location, 999 Selby Avenue, same time, same place from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. We have a lot of rallies. Go to the BLM Minnesota page, and you can sign up for rallies and things there. If you want upcoming rallies and events that we have coming up there, we got a big MLK rally coming up in January. If you'd like to donate, it's Cash App, BLMMN. And, sign up at BLM Minnesota on Facebook and RSVP for those events.
Thanks a lot. Leah, thank you so much for all your hard work. Everybody, make sure you contribute. www.njrevolutionradio.com. Like our Facebooks, our Instagrams, retweet us, stuff like that. And, message Leah, send us some artwork and let her know how she's doing. Send her some content. You could use some help, right, getting some things posted?
Absolutely, yeah. Anything that you guys want to throw in.
Looking for anything in specific? What are you looking for? I like funny memes. We don't put enough funny memes.
I love memes. Oh, memes are great. I have memes in store for you guys.
My comrade, Dave. I know Dave out there. Dave Novi. He's on Facebook. He's always sending me memes personally, man. Start sending them to the page because they're fucking hilarious, man.
Let me just say, I love how we didn't really talk about the election on this show. Like, we're focusing on the shit that matters.
There was an election? Oh, that's right. I remember that shit. Yeah, that shit's old. That's old shit. That happened already. 4 more years of oppression. I don't care. Anyway, appreciate you, Trey Hearn. I appreciate those Veterans for Peace. If you're tuning in out there because we caught you on their feed, thank you so much for all the work that you do. I love that organization. I'm going to get back in touch with them and make sure we have them on in the future. But that's all we got for this week. So until next Wednesday at 8 p.m., I want to remind all of you that the police can quit their jobs. Have a great week, everybody.
Peace.
2020 is pulling everyone's mask off. I mean, whether it's Democrats and their murder of the Me Too movement and their blind support for someone like Joe Biden.
They seemed really unreasonable, and it's like, are we still playing this game? What do you guys think about that?
In the here and now, that is going to be my concern. We don't want to see any more loss of life just because we lost the home.
And then have these politicians who want to co-opt everything just because it's near election time.
But solutions for these problems have to be positive, and they can't be based in policing. They just can't be based in more authoritarianism. They don't arrest your way out of these problems.